This is the voice of Contract Management, presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management, 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that impact the government contracting community. We have two topics to cover during today's podcast. The first is an executive order relating to DE&I, and the second is an OMB memo relating to IT procurements and contracts. We're going to start with the executive order. On March 26th, President Trump issued an executive order titled Addressing DE&I Discrimination by Federal Contractors. The EO declares diversity, equity, and inclusion activities, quote unquote, unethical and often illegal, close quote. And it imposes new obligations on federal contractors and subcontractors related to DE&I programming. Some context matters here. The EO is really best understood as a phase two implementation of the administration's earlier executive orders from January of 2025. That's EO 14151 and EO 14173. And let me explain a little bit more about what we mean. This March 2026 order really adds some additional operation and op and compliance mechanisms that agencies have to embed in covered contracts and subcontracts. So we start off with EO 14151. That was really focused on internal government DE&I architecture and equity-related spending. By contrast, Executive Order 14173 revoked the prior executive order that established the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, often referred to as OFCCP. That order directed OFCCP to cease promoting diversity and also holding contractors responsible for affirmative action or workforce balancing on certain bases. It required agencies to include in every contract or grant award a False Claims Act materiality term and certification that the party, open quote, does not operate any programs promoting DE&I that violate any applicable federal anti-discrimination laws, close quote. EO 14173 did not include a definition of what constitutes an unlawful DE&I program, but subsequent guidance from the administration throughout 2025, including from the EEOC and Attorney General, provided quite a bit of insight. So the March 2026 EO doubles down on that prior framework by specifying the government's concern with, open quote, racially discriminatory DE&I activities, close quote. It imposes mandatory clauses with an apparent flow-down type requirement, subcontractor reporting obligations, and also reiterating and operationalizing the FCA materiality concept inside the clause itself. It also provides an access to documents clause, and it seems to require the FAR Council to take action to integrate this framework into the FAR. So let's dig into some of the specifics from the EO. Yuan, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. So I'll start with the EO's prohibition against contractors engaging in racially discriminatory DEI activities, which is defined as the disparate treatment based on race or ethnicity in recruitment, employment, such as hiring or promotions, in contracting, such as through vendor agreements, and in program participation or the allocation or deployment of an entity's resources. The EO requires a new mandatory contract clause that all federal agencies must, within 30 days, include in their contracts and contract-like instruments. And under the clause, contractors need to agree to a number of activities. For example, it cannot engage in racially discriminatory DEI activities. It must provide full access to books, records, accounts, and other information required by the contracting agencies for purposes of ascertaining compliance. Contractors need to acknowledge that noncompliance can result in cancellation, termination, or suspension of a contract, or could result in the contractor being declared ineligible for further government contracts. There must be reporting of known or reasonably knowable subcontractor violations There also must be remedial measures that are directed by the contracting agency. There needs to be notification to the agency if a subcontractor files a lawsuit that puts at issue in any way the validity of the clause. And contractors must recognize that compliance is material to government payment decisions with direct implications under the FCA. The EO also directs the OMB to issue agency guidance to ensure compliance with this order, and in particular, agencies must cancel, terminate, or suspend contracts, or cause those actions to be taken, or contractors or subcontractors fail to comply with the clause, and there needs to be suspension or debarment of contractors or subcontractors for their failure to comply. And in the same vein, the EO directs the Attorney General to consider bringing additional FCA actions against contractors and to prioritize review of QTAM lawsuits that allege noncompliance in federal agreements. Peter, do you want to highlight a few more notable areas?
Yeah, I think maybe the one way to think about those notable areas is through the lens of the questions that we've been getting over the past week or so. And I think that really illustrates some of the challenges that companies are thinking about and some of the areas where we expect further clarity, whether it's through the rulemaking process or contract clauses. And to that end, I think the first piece really is to recognize that there will almost certainly be some agency action to implement the executive order. So really being on the lookout for what form that's going to take and carefully analyzing the language. One of the big questions we're getting is the extent to which the concept and term racially discriminatory DE&I activities is really squaring with prior administration guidance, and more importantly, how those terms are to be interpreted in light of federal anti-discrimination law and the prior executive order that used that language, which is absent from the March 26 order. So that's an important piece. A lot of companies are also thinking about how this executive order interplays with state law, with SBA, current contract requirements. There's also a question lingering out there about whether this executive order may be subject to challenge as beyond the president's scope under the Federal Property and Administrative Services Act, which is the general authority for issuing executive orders. There are also some questions that I think are really important to sort through about what type of subcontractor conduct is reasonably knowable. That's the standard in the executive order. What type of assurance or compliance programs are going to be required? What's envisioned there? Is it something beyond flow down? Is it some type of monitoring? So those are big, big areas that our clients are thinking about. So obviously something we'll be keeping an eye on. We expect a lot more forthcoming on this, and it would not be surprising if there was some sort of judicial challenge here. So we want to highlight one other topic during this edition. Yuan, I'll turn it back to you to talk about this OMB memo.
Thanks, Peter. On March 31st, OMB issued memo M26-10, which is titled Reinforcing Transparency, Accountability, and Oversight of Federal Technology, and is aimed at maximizing transparency and increasing accountability for agency chief information officers in support of the administration's goal of a more efficient and less wasteful government. Now, the memo operates on two primary pillars. First, it seeks to empower CIOs as strategic partners that must be appropriately involved in all IT-related decisions, and it seeks to eliminate information silos in federal technology acquisitions by treating acquisition data as a government-wide asset rather than a singular agency function. Now, we highlight this memo because it potentially has important implications for government contractors involved in providing IT to the government. Agencies are required to request that current vendors, including resellers, third-party vendors, manufacturers, provide information about utilization rates and prices paid for IT products like hardware, software, and services. And going forward, agencies must include provisions in all new solicitations and contracts requiring IT vendors to disclose utilization and pricing data to the government without limiting the extent to which that information may be shared across agencies. And in parallel, agency CIOs must begin monthly reporting to OMB covering all IT contracts that they personally approve, as well as any CIO delegated approvals for contracts that enable or facilitate public-facing digital services. So collectively, these requirements mean that IT vendors should be anticipating heightened scrutiny of their pricing, of their contract terms, of increased data disclosure obligations, and be expecting this government-wide push toward consolidation and cost efficiency in IT procurement. Back to you, Peter.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
We will close this edition out. Thanks for listening to the Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.